Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
So Budget 2026 will be unveiled in full later today in what is being dubbed a pro-investment budget by the government. It is likely to include a €10 increase in the pension, an extension to mortgage interest relief, but no tax cuts for workers. Well, let's go through what we know now and what we might expect from today's announcements. I'm joined in the studio by Kate English, who's chief economist with Deloitte, financial planner Owen McGee, and Michelle Murphy, research and policy analyst at Social Justice Ireland. And Cliff Taylor joins us on the line, columnist, of course, with the Irish Times. And Cliff, I want to start with you. I mean, given all that we know so far, is it your understanding that really there's nothing in this budget for taxpayers? There's going to be very little for households in general. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, very little for taxpayers, Claire, for sure. And I think that's really one of the standout elements of this budget. It'll be the first tax package of recent years where credits and tax bans haven't been adjusted in any way. And, you know, usually after the budget, the big discussion is who got what in terms of that process. And there's going to be pretty much none of that this year. There will be some bits and pieces on the tax side. The mortgage interest relief looks set to be extended for another couple of years. For example, the renter's tax credit is going to be extended, but very little extra there. So I think that is one of the real standouts of this budget. And the money in the tax package is going to go towards construction and hospitality. Then on the spending side, as you've said, there's the €10 increase in weekly payments. And the government will no doubt try and direct a bit of money towards households and other areas as well and say, look, we're moving away from the once-off supports that we saw over the last few years, but we're trying to do things permanently. But there is also an attempt to tighten up on spending growth. So I think on that side, things are going to be fairly limited too. So slim pickings, I think, as you said, for households.
And just the real-world impacts then when credits and tax bans are left untouched. How does that impact people over the course of the year?
Well, it is kind of a small tax increase for people, because if you don't index the tax bans on the tax credit for inflation, what it means is that a bit more income is taxed at the higher income tax rate of 40%. And some people who are outside the tax net at the moment see more of their income come into the tax net. So people will pay slightly more tax on their income next year, assuming they get wage increases. And we do know that average wage inflation next year is expected to be 4.5%. So I think taking that and the fact that people are not going to get the once-off energy credits, the once-off double child benefit weeks, I think households will notice the difference. And I think that is going to be one of the central points of argument about this budget.
Yeah, for sure, because some households benefited to the tune of 2,500 last year.
People with you know, a few children who qualified for children's allowance, you know, particularly, you know, three or four children families got very significant income boost towards the end of 2024 from the measures that were introduced in last year's budget, as well as the tax cuts. So people will certainly notice that, I think.
Okay, well, Michelle, to come to you from Social Justice Ireland, you're expecting a lot of people, I would imagine, to be disappointed then today.
Yes, I mean, just from listening to the RT news bulletins this morning, and was heard a lot of what seems to be coming this afternoon. But I mean, a €10 increase really is not enough in terms of welfare. I mean, Cliff mentioned the indexation of wages. I mean, we've been looking for the indexation of welfare payments to a percentage of average earnings for a long time now, and the minister has a report on that on his desk. We haven't seen sight of it yet. But I mean, the purchasing power for someone on a fixed income has decreased substantially over the past 4 years. And what we saw last year, what is really concerning to us, that it was those one-off measures, even though poverty increased slightly, it was those one-off measures that protected more people from falling into poverty.
So that they got people through.
Yeah, but without those, what you're going to see specifically is a spike in older people in poverty, unless we see something additional today that we haven't heard. But like €10 really isn't enough for those people on a fixed income. So you're looking at food inflation, you're still high accommodation, energy costs, their purchasing power has been reduced substantially. And, you know, there's a lot of talk you know, in September around child poverty, commitments around child poverty. We haven't really heard anything from the minister in a number of weeks. There is potentially an increase in the qualified child allowance. But ultimately, if you don't look at the weekly income going into a household, whether it's through wages, if they're in employment, or the weekly welfare payments, you're never going to lift the number of children, 190,000 out of poverty that we have at the moment. And that's the reality.
What do you think of that decision not to adjust the tax bands and the credits? Because for people who are paying tax on an average income, that's really important to keep you on a level, isn't it? And you know, as Cliff has explained there, that essentially means a tax increase.
For some, yes. And what it does, though, it saves the government money to use elsewhere so they can decide each year. I suppose what we would be concerned, if you're not going to do that or look at the credits for those lower income workers, that's really going to be an issue for them. Like the higher income workers will still benefit from the changes to the tax bands last year, and there were changes to the USC, and we might see slight adjustments to that in terms of the minimum wage increase as well. But without increasing those credits and indexation of the bands for those kind of lower income workers, they're really going to feel it, because if you don't have any other measures to target those workers, then they are really, because they don't qualify for some of the welfare benefits. So unless you extend kind of the threshold for working family payments or do something around fuel allowance or other entitlements in the welfare system, then that group will really, really struggle. And from what we've heard so far this morning, there doesn't seem to be much in the budget for that group of workers that have missed out. You know, they miss out every year because they don't earn enough to benefit substantially from the changes to the tax bands. And then if the credits aren't increased enough, then they're just really caught in the middle. And, you know, there doesn't seem to be much focus on that group. We're hearing about a pro-investment budget, but I think it's going to be challenging for the government coming into the winter and beyond. So you have people going to work who are really going to feel squeezed because prices are still increasing. You have people on a fixed income who are going to be cutting back more and more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, commitments are in the budget or in the programme for government in terms of carers, for example. Cost of disability payment, we've heard nothing about those either.
Owen, what do you say to this notion that the budget will be a pro-investment budget? Do you see that in what you've heard so far?
I do have concerns, because I totally agree with what Michelle is saying there, in terms we can suck up not getting increases to tax bans, and we can suck up not getting increased tax credits, because some of these, and take energy credit as a perfect example of it. Energy credit was something that was introduced across the board for everybody. Lots of people needed it, but some people didn't, right? So when they're pulling it back, you accept it being pulled back, provided you can see the money being channeled and focused in an area that really needs it and needs it more. So instead of spreading it across everyone, make sure we focus it in. And the 10 euro in particular, there were figures earlier on last week saying 15 euros and 20 euros. And the 10 euros is a bit, it's not a bit, it is disappointing, because you would hope that if we're not getting it over here, that they're giving it back somewhere else. So when it comes to investment, my big fear, and this is one of the things, the drum that I'm going to beat when I'm in here this morning, is on the opposite end of the scale, and the people who are doing well and maybe have a bit of savings, I really hope it seems to have disappeared, the taxation on investments at 41%. When I started doing what I do, it was at 20%. We're up at 41% now. There's a move from Europe to drive more people to invest instead of leaving their money sitting on deposit. And one of the detractors to that is the 41% tax. It's 33% on capital gains. And I would like to see, not necessarily, I'm not looking for it all today, I'm just looking to see a pathway that we can see over time, this is where we're going to go. Mm-hmm. I also think the big area for investment from a macro perspective is, we have done incredibly well in an FDI basis. And every year before the budget, the government of the day gets a warning to say we can't be so reliant on FDI and we really need to focus on our own economy. And I think we need to continue to nourish FDI. We continue to need to keep it here and keep it growing and doing what it's doing. But I think we also need to look at outside of Ireland. We need to look at Irish companies that are operating abroad and giving support on that side as well.
Why, because, what problems do they have?
Well, give them more money and they could probably do better. And what I'm looking for is that by doing that, by encouraging the next CRH or the next Kerry Group, and encouraging companies that are operating, Irish companies, Indigenous Irish companies who are operating abroad, we dilute the reliance we have on those FDIs and the companies that are here, and potentially what happens with tariffs and the fear and the scare, how scared we feel about what tariffs might have an impact on. And I think we can take control of that. We need to encourage business here, things like the hospitality and the VAT rate and that.
Do you agree with that? That reduction that looks now as though it is coming in for part of it, not for the hotel bed nights, but everything else in hospitality, it seems, is getting a VAT reduction.
The part of it, I think, is the really important part for me, right? I think that there are areas of hospitality that are closing down, and we have the numbers, that there's numbers out there. The closure of businesses that are often the heart of communities, that are local cafes, that are local pubs and restaurants, they need to be supported.
Yeah, but Kate's colleague in Deloitte did a piece of research on this that showed that reducing the VAT rate isn't going to save them.
Okay, and Deloitte are in a much better position than I am, Kate, to be able to say this is the actual impact of it. But when these companies are hurting and they're on the ground and the government can do something to support them, I think they can. Now,
in doing the wrong thing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not going to work and it's going to cost $670 million over the course of a full year that could be spent on other things, as we see.
Yeah, it could be spent. But I do think that when you're losing jobs and this argument to say, let's take that $600 million and spend it on something else, if the long-term result is that more hospitality disappears and they're not being supported and these places close down and we have more people on social welfare, we're going to have less money again. What this budget should really be giving us is, it should be giving us a clear plan as to what's going to happen over the next couple of years, that we have confidence to see that we're going to be investing at a time that's very turbulent, at a time that on an economic level, on a global economic level, there's a huge amount of uncertainty, and we need a plan that shows us that we are investing back in our own indigenous companies and our own hospitality sector and all the sectors to try and keep the people in work and keep them paying tax and keeping them off social welfare.
Okay, just on the VAT issue.
Yeah, I might just come in there. So my colleagues in Deloitte and the turnaround and restructuring team produce statistics every quarter on insolvencies rates, and that's what was released last Friday. And what we've seen very clearly in that is that there has been a substantial increase in insolvencies within the hospitality sector, but within the hospitality sector it's really that restaurant, it's the restaurants and cafes, as Owen said, are seeing the real brunt of the cost increases there. But what we've also seen in it is that there are many different reasons as to why they are feeling such a pinch at the moment. And I suppose the question with the VAT rate is, will that reduction make a material impact on what is actually a broken model for some of those companies? And from the work that my colleagues do day to day, the answer to that is no. So we will still see those insolvency rates come through. So there'll be no change to the trend within that data. But yet it has cost us a substantial amount of money that could have been spent elsewhere.
And also, I think the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council said last week you'd be looking at 11,400 nurses for that money. I mean, that's stark when you put it in those terms.
Stark. Now, I do think from what was initially put out there, it looks like a more reduced version of the VAT rate that's going
to
be announced today.
670 in a full year, I understand.
Yes, coming into play from July of next year. And it's back to that piece of there's no denying that these businesses are feeling really large cost pressures. What are those cost pressures? It's everything from labour to energy costs to food costs. And if we know that the pattern of insolvencies within these firms is not likely to change with the reduction in the VAT, are we not better off look at a more targeted support for those firms? So it's not about leaving them to the side and letting those firms continue to close their doors. It's how can you support them in a more targeted format that you're only supporting those who need it.
Okay, well,
it costs less and has a better overall end result. And that's what you have to think of with all of these, because unfortunately there are really tough choices that need to be made when it comes to budget day.
I'm just going to bring Cliff back in on this. Cliff, I mean, I'm sure the government has looked at all of the other ways that they could have targeted support for the hospitality sector, you know, intervening when it comes to energy costs, intervening perhaps in labour costs, but maybe that sets a precedent. I'm not sure. Can you tell us what the logic is around the VAT cut?
Yeah, I mean, I understand they have looked at a range of alternatives as well in terms of restricting VAT and directing help in other areas. And I guess directing help at businesses is difficult, and you know, finding a measure that just helps the companies that need to be helped and gives them enough help, as Kate said, in an era when the problems are, you know, really big increases in costs and payrolls, and you know, they just feel like they're being hit on all sides. But I think politically, the key was that in the programme for government, there was a commitment to help this sector, and immediately afterwards, the VAT promise was made, if you like. Mm-hmm. So I think the government has found itself caught on that. And it has reduced the room for manoeuvre, I suppose, elsewhere in the budget. Now, as you said, it has only been increased from next July, so the cost next year will fall significantly. And I think the thing that has come in late in the day that has took up a lot of the additional room in the tax package is cutting VAT for apartment building and other measures in the corporate tax code as well. As my colleague Jack Horgan-Jones reported this morning, to try and boost apartment building, which is a kind of a key problem area for the government. And recent figures have shown that despite all the money being thrown at it through a variety of schemes run by the Department of Housing, you know, apartment building is still stuck here. And I think it's an attempt in the first year of this, or the first budget of this government, to try and get this going so they'll see some difference by the end of their term. But it remains to be seen whether it will work. And, you know, it is a gamble directing resources in that way and not directing it to households.
So VAT on apartment building will be what, 9% after the budget, will it?
Yeah, it will. Okay. And there's a range of other measures then as well, which have to be outlined this afternoon, which haven't come out.
So who here
fully
thinks that will work? Michelle?
Well, I mean, if the previous measures haven't worked, how are they going to prove that this is going to work? I mean, we've substantial money we need to invest in the construction of social housing. I don't think it's an efficient use of resources. I mean, we're told consistently we need to use resources efficiently and be prudent. I mean, why are you narrowing the tax base in terms of two VAT reductions, extending tax credits and introducing new tax credits or tax breaks, tax expenditures? You're narrowing a tax base at a time when we're over-reliant on a really volatile proportion of revenue, which is the corporate tax. We need to be expanding, broadening our tax base. We need to be looking at, as Owen said, shoring up the investment. Hmm. And we need to be looking
but
at putting money
Michelle,
where they need
it. Michelle, you've got competing demands there, because we really need homes to be built.
We do really need it. But who's to say that a VAT cut is going to produce more apartments? I mean, where is that written? And the other thing is, Cliff mentioned, you know, political promises there. Political promises have been made to carers and people with disability for every single election. The last government promised a carers guarantee, didn't deliver it. This one has promised to fully fund a carers guarantee. It would cost us less than the full year cost of that VAT cut for hospitality to address the issue in terms of the means test and the income disregard for carers. So why is one sector of an industry a priority and the people that are home 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, caring for a family member, not a priority? Like, that's the other quest. This is the first budget of this government. I think later on today, we'll really see what their priorities are. And from what I'm hearing at the moment, it's not those people at the bottom that Owen said we should be shoring up some of that spare money to and addressing it to. And, you know,
Kate, you want to come in there?
If we might just come in on the apartment piece, I think in one respect, it's not narrowing the tax base for that, because they're not being built to begin with. So that tax isn't coming in because shovels are not going in the ground to build those apartments. So that's the first thing. The second thing here is, I suppose, with the cut in the VAT for apartments, it's we know there is a viability gap when it comes to building apartments. They're very, very expensive to build. And this is really the last in a suite of measures that have been announced over the last few months to try and close that viability gap when it comes to apartment construction. Earlier in the summer, we saw the reduction or the change in size guidelines when it comes to apartments. We saw tweaks when it also looked at the rental caps as well. And this apartment, the cut in VAT for apartment construction is the final piece of that. Does it finally eventually close that viability gap? I don't know. I haven't seen a model in front of me with that reduction from 13.5% to 9%, but it certainly will go a long way. We now need to see the results from that. And it comes back to, again, when we think of budget, we need to almost take a seat back and go, well, what do we want Ireland to look like in 2036, not only 2026? And when we sit down and first start talking about budget in March and April, we did of this year, it was thinking of how do we scale our economy and our infrastructure to cater for our society to ensure what our economy looks like in 2030. 36.
Well, the big focus
and ensuring
is going to be
that apartment building is there is a key piece of that. Otherwise, we will not reach housing demand requirements without that apartment construction. That is a fact.
What I'm hearing from what you're saying there, and I actually agree with you, right? These apartments are not being built. But what I'm hearing being said by Deloitte, let's call it, is that let's give it a try because we haven't tried it. But when we look at the restaurants, we're saying, oh no, it's not going to work. Let's not try it. So can you just explain the difference to me between the two of those things?
I suppose when we, and I'm saying that I haven't personally seen a model in front of me, that's not to say that it isn't there, that we know there was estimates, some of it was that there was a 100K kind of viability gap for apartment delivery. And with each measure that's announced, I suppose a portion of that is chipped away.
But is the exact same thing not true about restaurants?
Not necessarily. I think we will see an increase in delivery of apartments from this VAT reduction coming through. If it's not, we simply will not see apartments built on the ground. It's back to this piece with the hospitality of where it is a blanket approach. With the VAT cut for apartments, it actually is a targeted approach on just one segment of accommodation or housing delivery. It's not a blanket VAT cut approach to the entire residential
market.
But
I do think that's where the part, and the word you used at the start there was part, that what part of hospitality is going to be looked after with this VAT cut. I don't want to see certain parts of the hospitality sector looked after. I don't think they need it, but
they're going to get it.
They are going to get it.
The big operators are going to get this. I mean, it's at the moment what
I don't agree with that, the
bed nights are going to be excluded, but the big fast food chains are going to get this in the same way as the cafe and restaurant in your local town. Cliff, just to come back to you on infrastructure, because that is going to be a main plank, we understand, of this budget, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I suppose we saw the main action on that recently in the revised National Development Plan, where the government outlined these massive plans for infrastructure delivery over the next 5 years. And we know there's various working groups and talks of planning changes and all kinds of stuff going on in the background there. One of the impacts of that, and I think this is going to be underlined by Pascal Donohue and Jack Chambers today, is that, well, if you're going to spend a load of money on infrastructure, you have to tighten up a bit on current day-to-day spending. And I think that's one of the things that has caused the political difficulties with this budget, because there were a lot of promises made, some of them referred to there by Michelle. Another one that was made in the programme for government and in the election campaign was a reduction in the cost of childcare to €200 a month, which is a long way from where it is at the moment. Mm. And if we don't see progress on that, for example, in today's budget, I think people can legitimately ask, where is that going to be in 5 years' time?
What we're hearing on that, and Michelle, I'm sure you've heard that as well, that now the focus is on provision of additional places for this budget as opposed to reducing costs. I mean, that is not what was promised. And, you know, there are those who would sensibly say you've got to do both. But if you say that, you have to actually do both, not just one side of that.
Yeah, because I think the promise was actually to reduce it, I think, to €200.
That's right, a month. Yeah.
There's a big
over the lifetime of the government.
But you need to do both, because there's already waiting lists. So providing those additional places isn't necessarily going to bring the cost down. It's just going to provide some places for children who are on waiting lists at the moment.
But is it a promise kept if you say, well, we're going to do the provision bit this year and we'll get back to the reducing it down the cost to 200 later on in the game?
But then if we get to next year and a substantial portion of whatever's there in terms of revenue is already allocated, we're looking at more investment. And if the only focus is not on raising revenue but reducing expenditure, then, you know, it remains to be seen. It's very questionable whether that will be delivered or not. And like, those are promises that have been made. And those are things, as Kate mentioned, like if you look on a 10-year time frame, like what do we want? We should have enough housing for people. Apartments, yes, but with a universal design standard. We're a population that is aging. As you age, you acquire, you know, mobility issues, disabilities. Anything we build now that's a new build should be adaptable for people so that they can age in place. We should have school places sufficient for children with additional need as they go through the education cycle. It's not just primary level, it's second level and then beyond, because it's a real success story for us that people with disabilities.
But Michelle, is that
longer.
Not the whole point of focusing on investing in infrastructure? That we are, you know, resilient
be,
over the next
like
10 years.
We'd like to see some plan. I mean, we had the NDP review, which, you know, didn't run to the hundreds of pages one might expect. I think it was about a 40-page document. And yes, we got some detail in terms of some investment, but what are the timelines on it? How is it going? Like, how are we going to do the energy storage, the interconnectors, increase grid capacity, the water, and everything to support the apartments? How are we going to timeline on the additional, whether we build new classrooms or what it is we do? There's lots of things we need to expand, but there's not a lot of clarity in terms of where the government sees this going over 5 years. They are due to publish their medium term fiscal plan for the next 5 years as part of the budget. So we'll kind of see where they see their spending going over the next 5 years. But in terms of their vision for the country, like to date, that's been lacking. And that's something you would expect to see them, especially if they're putting in this much investment into infrastructure. What are we going to see in 5 years, 10 years time? What can we expect?
And okay. I think that's really important. I think I'm not someone who buys into noise, and I don't think anyone can sit back over the last 30 years and pick any individual year and say, oh, this is a very calm time. It's always uncertainty. But I think right now we have a government who's got 5 years ahead of them. I want to see from this, if we can't have it all today and we have to mix and match what we're going to do, I want to see a plan for it being introduced. I'd also like to see some confidence that we're going to have the same Minister for Finance in there, that there's no Europe attraction to him disappearing. I'd like to see, maybe you might ask him for us tomorrow, Claire, I'd like to see that he's going to be around to deliver on any plan he promises us today.
All right, we will leave it there. Owen McGee, Kate English, Michelle Murphy and Cliff Taylor. And of course, we will have rolling coverage throughout the day here on RT Radio 1. And reminder coming up on tomorrow's programme, as Owen mentioned there, whether you're a renter or a business owner or a carer or a parent feeling the cost of living pressure, we want to hear from you, because Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue and Public Expenditure Minister Jack Chambers will be right here in the studio with me tomorrow to answer all of your Budget 2026 questions. So if you want to join us live on air tomorrow to ask the ministers about any budget measure, you can email us now, todaycb@rte.ie, with the question that you want answered. That's todaycb@rte.ie. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.